Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
Hi, welcome to AJAG PD Pod. This is season 2, episode number 2. And today we have the pleasure of hosting Anna Malajavaya, who's a tax lawyer. And today the topic is going to be bear trusts, something we all
have come to love.
Yes. This episode of AJAG PD Pod is presented by Minted Search Group. Finding the right CPA for your firm can be challenging. Minted Search Group specializes in connecting companies with top-tier accounting and finance talent. Need to hire or exploring new opportunities? Visit mintedsearchgroup.com today. All right. So we want to talk about
Bear trusts.
And that's why we brought you in, Anna.
Thank you very much for having me. Happy to talk about bear trusts.
Yeah, it's something that has plagued us in the profession. And we've done courses on this before, but it's not going away. We've just got a little bit of a reprieve.
Yeah, the 1 year.
Yeah, yeah.
One year break.
So this is why we thought, all right, let's talk some more about this so people don't forget about it. But how did we get here?
I don't think people will forget about bear trusts. No. People who survived the start of last year tax season will never forget bear trusts. For them, it's a four-letter word, bear trusts. Yeah. If you're just starting your practice and you don't remember the start of last year's tax season, I will remind you a bit of a history of bear trust reporting in Canada. For about 30 years, we had a good run. We did not have to report bear trusts. And even then, it was questionable. We did not have to report them for income tax or HST purposes. We just ignored them entirely. And this is because under the Income Tax Act, the definition of trust excluded a type of arrangement where the trustee was acting as an agent for all beneficiaries in respect of all of the trust property. So this arrangement specifically was excluded from the definition of trust. Therefore, it did not have to be reported under the old rules. That started to change. Starting from early 2000s around the world. So the governments around the world got together and they said that, you know, we cannot have all those criminals and terrorists to using bear trusts and staying under the radar. So we won all the OECD countries, including at that time Canada, to commit to certain reporting requirements that will apply to bear trusts as well as regular trusts, the conventional trusts, so the active trust, whatever you want to call it. And Canada committed to these changes around in 2014, and starting from roughly 2022, it started introducing draft legislation mandating the reporting of bear trusts. We are now on draft number 5 of that legislation. And whatever we have a legislation that has been passed that received royal assent in December of 2022, that legislation was supposed to apply to taxation years ending after December 30th, 2023. The first filing requirement for bear trust, if you remember, was around, if memory serves me right, April 2nd of 2024. Around January, February, all our colleagues were dealing with hundreds of calls from our clients saying, do I even have a bear trust? Right. I don't understand what it is. Do you know what it is?
Right.
And so the accountants would be calling lawyers, lawyers would be calling the accountants, and everyone was very frustrated. And you probably remember that around 6 days or 4 days before the filing deadline.
It was the Friday afternoon.
That's right. Yeah.
4 o'clock.
Yeah. The government.
A day that we'll live on.
And I think the Monday was the filing deadline.
Right.
And Friday, they.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when we got that announcement from the, I think it was from the Minister of Finance or the CRA, I can't remember now, that they will pause that requirement. They would put that legislation on hold, stay tuned. By that time, I understand that close to 40,000 bear trust returns
have been filed. Yeah.
Already, people spend a lot of money paying lawyers, accountants to do these returns, to figure out how to file those returns. There was a lot of discussions about who should be responsible for the costs people had to incur for nothing, filing those returns that didn't need to be filed. Yeah. And apparently those costs were significant.
Yeah.
So you probably remember that. And then fast forward to, that's when I committed to write an article on bear trusts. And I almost completed that article by August of last year when the government announced draft number 5 of the legislation. So I had to rewrite that article. And in October of this year, the government clarified that they will not require bear trust to report file tax returns unless they're specifically asked to do so.
Yeah.
And I think we have till the end of this year when the requirement is still does not apply. But if you think that this is a topic that's no longer relevant and the government will forget about it, let me assure you that it will remain relevant. You will have to file bear trust returns. Yeah. So whatever we went through last year tax season, you will have to go through again. So hopefully together we can, make that process less stressful.
Yeah, but it's here to stay.
Oh, I'm quite certain that it's here to stay.
And there's
changes.
There's no legislation like capital gains, which wasn't passed with respect to this area, is there or not?
There is legislation that has been passed. That law became royal assent in Canada royal assent in Canada December 22nd, 2022. Okay. This is law.
Yeah.
So if you open the Income Tax Act, it's not shaded in
gray.
It's
the reals there.
It's the real legislation. The draft legislation that was proposed in August, that has not been passed. And my guess is that we will see draft number 6 of bear trust rules.
Yeah. Well, at least maybe once it becomes mandatory, we can recover our whip from
before,
from the old stuff that we couldn't bill.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that came on the heels, the year before it was underused housing.
UHT, yeah.
Remember how that?
Not even a year, so 4 months before.
right. And then, of course, the third time lucky with capital gains and with all that. It's been an interesting time these last couple of years, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's why people are flooding into the profession. They're so, so exciting. Such
good opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoever thought. So Anna, different types of trusts. We have active trusts. We have bear trusts. So walk us through bear trusts. How does somebody identify a bear trust for those who haven't been paying attention for the last year?
Well, in very simple terms, that's how I explain it to clients. It may be too simple for your audience, but let me know if I need to elevate it.
All right.
In your regular conventional trust, your active trust, the trustee is normally the boss. You have a trust instrument with trust agreement, and trustee calls the shots. There is a rule for trustee to follow. There is a trust instrument with all the rules for the trustee to follow. The trustee does not have to listen to the beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, subject to certain exceptional rules when the beneficiaries together may have a certain power. But absent that, imagine your standard family trust when, grandma put in $1 million for the benefit of children and grandchildren.
Yeah.
And there is a set of rules that governs how that $1 million gets invested. And who gets the profits at what time, what conditions need to be satisfied, who has discretion. The trustee normally, a lot of times, has discretion. Or if the trustee does not have discretion, there is a set of rules that says this is how you distribute the $1 million. So the trustee is the boss in a active trust. Mm. The trustee has lots of work to do. He's running around or she being active, managing the trust property. Mm. In the bare trust, as the name suggests, sometimes they're referred to as naked trust or dry trust.
Mm.
The trustee does almost nothing. The beneficiary is the boss. The beneficiary calls the shots. The beneficiary tells the trustee what to do.
Mm.
The trustee does nothing but to hold that property and do what the beneficiary tells them to do. And as soon as the beneficiary tells the trustee, I want my $1 million into my bank account now, the trustee needs, the bare trustee in this case, the bare trustee has to transfer that $1 million to the beneficiary, to the beneficiary of the bare trust. So this is the main difference. And because the beneficiary has so much power, until recently, we treated that beneficiary as the real...
As the owner.
As the, which really he is,
right,
the true beneficial owner. And right, that beneficiary had to report all the income on $1 million, or if the property was sold, you know, report capital gain on that property. So we ignored the bare trustee until recently, and we just treated it as if that beneficiary was legal and beneficial owner.
Right.
So that was the situation until recently, but now the government wants more transparency as to who is the true beneficial owner. So if your true beneficial owner doesn't appear on title, the government wants to know.
So that's the Schedule 15 now where it's reported. Now, you were just explaining the trust structure was ignored and the beneficiary just treated it as their own personal asset and reported. Now, my understanding with the new rules is that that element of it won't change. The income tax reporting portion won't necessarily change. You just need to file a trust return to report the accommodation, really, between the bare trustee and the beneficiary.
The T3 is the mechanism to... But
to schedule, do that reporting.
But Schedule 15 is the schedule that's used to report that right relationship.
Yeah. But any financial transaction that takes place, any that could be, you know, reportable for tax purposes, that is still, they're still not looking for that to go through the T3 return and then, you know, issue a T3 slip, let's say, to the beneficiary the way it would be in a normal trust. Is that still the way CRA is looking at it?
That's my understanding. So again, using an example of $1 million that, or the property that somebody holds in somebody else's name, the obligation is now on the trustee, the person who holds the legal title. Before, they had no obligation. They couldn't care less, right? You do it as a favor for your friend. You don't have any filing obligations. You don't do anything. You don't file anything.
Right.
If the CRA asks you what this is, you say, this is not mine.
Yeah.
But now the trustees have the obligation to report that arrangement. So that's an important change. And then if you're right, income tax effect of it does not change. Before, the beneficiary was responsible for all the tax or for all the tax on income or all the reporting requirements associated with that bear trust. It still remains to be the case. The only thing that changed is that the government wants to know that you have this bear trust arrangement.
So it remains, at least under the current draft legislation, simply an information return. The T3 that the bear trust will be filing, it's strictly information to identify the trustee and the beneficiary.
Correct.
Except it's not draft, if I understand it.
Well, under the current draft changes to the legislation.
Okay. So just to clarify, there is a legislation that's in the Income Tax Act that has passed.
Yes.
And under that legislation, bear trusts do have to file a return. But under the announcement from late March of last year, that legislation is put on hold, so to say.
Right.
Now, so then fast forward to August of last year, August 2024, we now have a brand new draft legislation. So that legislation is still draft. So we have this strange situation where we have an actual legislation that mandates the filing, but it's put on hold. And we have a draft legislation that mandates the filing, but it has not been passed.
But there wasn't a substantive change in that most recent draft, was there or not?
If you ask me as a lawyer, I saw a very significant change and I didn't like it.
What was it?
That the introduction of the deemed trust concept.
Huh.
I don't know if you've noticed. So in very simple terms, under the old ancient rules, we had a section that said, I think it was 140.4, that said that the trust does not include an arrangement where the trustee acts as an agent in respect of all dealings with the property. Under the rules that have been passed, but now on hold, they just took the exact same wording and they said, oh, by the way, it was excluded before, but now
it's included.
Okay. Now, if you have an arrangement where the trustee acts as an agent in respect of all dealings with the property, we think it's a trust, report it. Yeah? So to me, it made sense. Under the most recent rules, they removed all that wording and they replaced it with a concept of a deemed trust. And for that deemed trust, they say that, you know, we're going to deem any arrangement to be a trust if we have a trustee holding property for the use of or benefit of another individual. When we have one person holding a property for the use of or benefit of another individual. And if that trustee acts if that person can be reasonably be considered to act as an agent for that person, then we have a deemed trust. So this is brand new concept. So all trust lawyers who read that went, "Wow! So this is new." So we have centuries of trust law established over the years, and now this is a brand new animal for us lawyers. We all got very excited.
Wow.
Well,
But what? Okay, so not a lawyer. What is the difference in the concept?
Okay. Why did that get your attention?
Okay, so before, there was a consensus. So the CRA's position and the legislation was very consistent with those centuries of trust law that I was talking about. And in those centuries of trust law, we knew that we have a beneficial owner, a true owner.
Yeah.
And we had a legal owner who is just, you know,
a bear trustee.
A bear trustee who doesn't do much.
Right.
They don't have a lot of power. They are not. They're just there to hold the property.
Yeah.
And they're there to release the property when they're asked to do so. And our beneficial owner, our beneficiary of the bear trust under the old concepts was the boss, like I told you. Remember I told you, beneficial owner is the boss. They get to use it, sell it, you know, they get to tell everything. They bear all the risks in respect of the property. They get to use it. They get to earn income from it. They get to do whatever they want with the property. The trustee has no power.
Right.
And beneficiary of the bear trust has all the power in the world.
Yeah.
Now, this has changed under the current version of the rules. So if you read it closely, it says that as long as you hold the property for the use of someone or benefit of someone.
So it's the use that's different
so
now.
The use is enough. So I don't know if you have a cottage, and if you ask any parents in Canada, why do you really bother with the cottage? You know, you may be getting older, it's still a lot of upkeep, and they say, well, it's for my kids to use.
Right. There we go.
It's for my kids to use, right? Mm-hmm. And there is nothing in the rule that would say that my parents that own the cottage, nothing says that the parents would have to have nothing to do with the cottage. Nothing that would say that it's the kids that should be paying for the cottage, responsible for the cottage, bearing the risk on the cottage. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
So right now, the way rules are drafted, you have parents that can be legal owners and beneficial owners of the cottage.
Yeah.
But because the language is wide enough to argue that because they hold it for the benefit or for use of the children, they're caught. Or we have landlords.
So it's the deeming. It's the deeming that can be beyond even the party's intention. If CRA wants to look at an arrangement or whoever, an outsider looks at that and says, well, that's a deemed trust, even though that might be news to the bear trustee and the legal owner.
Absolutely, it sees
through what people's intentions were originally.
I can see a lot of unintentional application based on the language as drafted now. The Joint Committee did raise it. They used an example of landlords and tenants. Landlords pour their property for the use of the tenants. Are we caught?
Yeah.
Or licensees or like the company.
Well, what about a husband and wife, a professional who isn't on title on the house, but the spouse holds it? That's a bear trust, isn't it?
That's another good question. So there's a whole story about it. I want to talk about it because it was a very popular question coming from clients early last year.
You can see how all the carve outs will start coming, right? So if the individual who has the use of the asset is paying for the use of the asset, then that'll be excluded. Right. And the principal residence, you got to figure that will, because there's other rules that sort of cover that anyway somewhere.
What do you think?
Or what would even be the point? So take the cottage example, mm-hmm. right? So if it's deemed, right, if that falls now, if that cottage property that's being held for the use by the children, mm-hmm. and the children are not on title.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that goes through, and that is, you now have to report a trust.
Imagine that.
For that. I mean, what would even be the point? Like, what information would that give to CRA that could be of any use from a tax point of view?
Is it just tax now, though? Or is it
more maybe
reporting?
It's not tax. Maybe...
You're smiling.
Yeah, you're getting into so, why. I like it.
Yeah.
I like talking about why.
Yeah. Let
me qualify that example. There is a second requirement. So requirement number one is as long as you hold something for the use of or benefit of someone.
Yeah.
And the second requirement, you must be reasonably be considered to act as an agent for that person. So the second requirement that we would have to meet, in my example was the cottage and the parents and the children, is that the CRA would have to prove, if they were to argue that this is a reportable arrangement, that parents act can be not agents, that's very important, but not actual agents under law, but can be reasonably be considered to act as agents for the children. Like a mouthful of, but... You know, I don't know. You know, that my dad tells me what I tell him to, like what I want him to do. He just really loves me. It doesn't mean that he acts. He is reasonably considered to be acting as an agent for me.
Right. What could just be a regular familial relationship now takes on a commercial side of it. Is what's what I understand you're saying here, or a legal side anyway.
I don't know where they getting this from. I cannot grasp the logic, to be honest with you. I thought about it for quite some time. I do think that it's important to cut arrangements for this. I do think it's important for this area, for the integrity of our tax system, for our tax authorities to know the true beneficial owners. Without the question, I think it's important.
Yeah, but how far do you go to establish that, I guess, is the question.
But I think that when you have a true beneficial owner, when you have a person who paid for the property, uses the property, controls the property, takes risks of the property, earns income from the property, collects proceeds of sale when the property is sold, that's your true beneficial owner. By all means, make that arrangement reportable.
Yeah.
But I don't know why they limited that deemed trust arrangement simply to use of.
Right.
When
you might be able to use that, you know, take advantage of that. And that's now a good income splitting opportunity, right? If you're deeming the beneficiaries to be de facto owners or partial owners, so you sell the cottage, you have a capital gain, and now you split the gain between all the kids.
After all, they were beneficial owners.
Exactly. There you go.
To your point, usually let's imagine the situations that the CRA is trying to catch. A scenario when, there is an arrangement somewhere within the family that says, you know, we're not going to really put the kids on the title. But the arrangement is this: when the cottage is sold, Bob gets 30%, Lucy gets 20%, and George gets the rest. And everyone gets to use the property, and technically it doesn't fall in under the bridge that extended deemed trust definition.
Right.
But my point is that what you just created is an express trust that must be reported under the current rules. So you don't need that use of or benefit of. To me, this is a concept that makes things unnecessarily wide and confusing to people. I have to say that I like the original draft of the rules that made true beneficial
without
owners.
Without the use provision.
Yeah, that made true beneficial owners report their property as a bare trust arrangement. And when they had it in under the table agreement, that's an agreement. That's the trust instrument. That's the rules that somebody needs to follow.
Is the will the express trust in that scenario?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what about a situation? I've got one where like same scenario that you're talking about. Adult children are the intended recipients of this. The legal and beneficial owner has now lost capacity. She's in her 80s. She doesn't remember what day of the week it is. So you have this thing moving and changing throughout the life of the ownership of this asset. There must now be a new agent coming into that who maybe is a child or something like that. How do we handle what we've reported all the way along and said there's a bare trust? Well, now there isn't a bare trust because that person's out of the picture now. They're still alive. They still own it, but they're not they're not.
Right. Well, capable. You'd have a change of trustee.
And then is there a deemed year end? Is there? When does that happen?
But that wouldn't necessarily make a difference.
Except in the reporting.
I would argue that in your scenario, when we have a grandma who lost capacity, I don't see a bear trust situation. I see an agency relationship when one of the children hopefully steps in and starts acting under the power of attorney,
right,
and managing mom's property,
right,
in a way that she wanted to be, hopefully in a way that she wanted it to be managed. If that child chooses to transfer the property to himself only, the other children will object. Let me assure
you, they
will not like it at all.
Right.
So there will be that arrangement when the child has to act on behalf of mom. That's an agency relationship. The child does not become the legal owner of the property.
Right.
Mom remains the legal owner, and really, mom is the beneficial owner of the property. Unless the power of attorney allows for to dispose of property, then she still gets the process. So she remains the true owner of everything that has to do with the property until she dies and her will provides for a different distribution.
Right. Any other details on that?
I didn't ask you why. I didn't answer your question about the why.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. The why.
The
interesting part.
The interesting part. So people ask me, especially accountants, ask me, why did they do this to us? Why they put us and our clients through so much suffering? And my view is this. This is purely my view. There are two types of taxpayers that may have benefited from the bear trust arrangements, from those arrangements not being reportable. The first category is the bad people, the Tony Sopranos of this world. And obviously a lot of them, the Vladimir Putins of the world, who do not hold their assets in their own names. Mm. My guess is though that these rules will do very little to encourage Tony Soprano to go to his accountant and say, oh, I put this nightclub in the name of my nephew, Christopher Moltisanti, and now I have to report it. I just want to comply and I want to get a penalty.
Right.
I don't think Tony Soprano...
capture those people.
It won't.
Yeah.
So they're really bad people that the rules were intended to catch. I don't think they will run to their accountants to comply. That's my guess. And if they do, if
the penalties are pretty. If caught, the penalties are strong enough.
Exactly. But in my experience, these people have bigger problems to worry about if they're caught. So the penalties for not reporting a bear trust
will be the least of their problems
if they get caught.
But
there is a second category of taxpayers who, I'm going to be honest, benefited somewhat from this bear trust arrangement being under the radar. And here I always give an example of if any of you have teenage children and you go away with your husband, to a cottage, and then you come back and you find something like a cigarette under your desk or something. And then you say, who is... cigarette is this? What does your teenager say? They say, it's not mine, right? They say, it's not mine. So this is the second, it's not mine category of taxpayers who until now benefited
from the ambiguity
of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever they, whatever something came to mind and the CRA would you know, identify that, you know, they hold the property, but they didn't comply with some rules. Mm. I don't know. Imagine a non-resident,
right.
This is from the old days, non-resident holding a real property and not complying with Section 216 withholding requirements for rental income that they've earned.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if they're caught, the consequences are pretty brutal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so technically, and I'm not saying I would ever condone it, but or support it, that person would sometimes say, "Oh, it's not mine.
Yeah.
It's my son who lives in Canada and who is a student. He is the true beneficial owner. Here's a bear trust agreement that we've created yesterday, but really the date says it was created 15 years ago."
Right.
So, I'm not going to lie, these things may have been happening.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is a true beneficial ownership with that parent outside of Canada and that child student inside of Canada.
Yeah.
And there was nothing wrong with documenting it and proving to the CRA that the son was the beneficial owner.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was just funny business that the CRA had to deal with and,
yeah,
and argue about. And,
yeah.
And so this may be why they still hope for that Tony Soprano will come forward,
right,
and start reporting,
right,
his earnings, right, from mafia
as holdings. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, but then those "it's not mine" category of taxpayers will now have a much harder time arguing,
making that argument.
Yeah, backdating that argument.
But in the meantime, we've got like T3 returns to file now on Schedule 15s, like on everything, even what would have just seemed like innocent arrangements between spouses. You were going to talk about principal, yes, residence.
Spouses, so, yes.
Yeah.
So under the current rules, there was a lot of discussion about the arrangements that spouses have and whether or not it's reportable. And that would apply to joint ownership. Well, technically, you can argue that husband holds 50%, wife holds 50%. Do they hold their, like, the as joint owners? Can you argue that they hold the remaining 50%
on behalf of
one another? Like, there's that cross ownership, joint, yeah, ownership, weird legal concept. Mm. Is that reportable? So that a lot of people were thinking about that. And a simpler situation, the house is in husband's name or in wife's name.
Mm.
Does it mean that he or she holds the 50% of the house in bare trust for the wife? Does it mean that millions of Canadians now have to pay for that additional T3 slip,
yeah,
and report that arrangement? So luckily, the August draft legislation somewhat resolved that issue, and there's a new exemption that says that when we have spouses holding principal residence, then the reporting rules will not apply. So it's not a deemed trust. However, imagine the situation. I don't know if you, I keep making reference to Tony Soprano, assuming that everyone watched the show, but Tony Soprano is a main character of a HBO show called Sopranos. He was a brutal mafia boss, and he made lots of money and obviously didn't report any of that money. He was married to a woman called Carmela Soprano. Carmela was a stay-at-home mom, didn't do anything. I mean, other than being a mom, let me correct myself,
yeah,
which is a lot of work. But she did not earn any income, is what I'm trying to say. So imagine the situation when Tony brings $3 million of cash from one of his
deals, yeah, yeah,
and gives it as a gift to Carmela, and Carmela purchases a cottage, a nice lakefront cottage, using that money for the use of and benefit of Tony. So we don't have a principal residence, so our exemption doesn't apply. That exemption that I was just talking about applies to spouses. But at the same time, we have an income producing property or secondary property. It doesn't have to be income producing. And Carmela is on title. Do we have a deemed trust or not? Can we say that Carmela can reasonably be considered to act as agent for Tony? And so we get into all of that fun.
That scenario might conflict with the principal residence exemption.
Oh, that was what I was
because
thinking. You're not determining.
You could say, okay, this year my house, the house in the city is I'm electing.
Yeah.
Next year it's the cottage. And then the year after it's the city.
Switches back.
And so each year you might, you know, the trust might. You might exempt the property every other year.
It's forcing, if I understand it, it's forcing people to say that property is going to be my principal residence when we don't know.
When you don't know. So you then maybe just file the return. But then if you file a trust return on a cottage, mm-hmm. let's say, and ultimately when that cottage is sold, you say, okay, no, but that was my principal residence.
Could there
be any conflict in that election being accepted? If you would,
want to make sure I understand you right. So normally trusts are subject to very limited exceptions. A regular trust does not get to claim principal residence exemption.
Correct. But we're talking about a couple that own multiple properties that they occupy. So either of those properties, in your example, mm-hmm. could be the principal residence.
True.
And so at that point, we don't know. Like I'm always saying to clients, we don't know which of those two properties be a principal residence.
Right.
Yes. Because we want to elect at the best to defer the most amount of tax, and we don't know what the future will hold. So how do we...
You pre-elect principal residence designation in advance.
Would you want to do that? Because you don't know which property is going to be worth more.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a problem.
That's a valid point.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I mean, it maybe it wouldn't even affect it, but I guess it's still... so vague. Like
for your upcoming course, you're going to have to get an answer on that.
Yeah.
does
reporting a second property as a cottage that's on title in one spouse's name, if you report that as a bare trust,
are you bound by that?
Does that in any way impact a future use of a principal residence exemption? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's I'm just overthinking it because all you're doing is
you thought the same thing that I did.
Yeah,
which is...
but all you're doing is reporting ownership
mm-hmm.
or beneficial ownership.
Beneficial ownership.
You're not in any way
committing
and designating it.
Well,
in terms of the tax.
But is the principal residence exemption eligible on a trust?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As of 2017, they're not, right?
You can't flow with if a home is a type of trust.
Certain type of
will preserve the principal.
Well, hopefully they'll be you're right. It has
so
to be
that
exempt.
Might
yeah.
that they might have to
have a carve
into the thing.
Yeah.
Wow, fascinating stuff, eh? It's great.
I told you it's everyone's like it's gonna be a boring topic.
And you know the frustrating thing was this scared the life out of me because last year when we were trying to train our clients on what a bare trust was, I thought I had it down, right? and then you threw out an example and it was like I never even thought of that. I didn't even think that was a possibility. And I think there was a lot of that going back and forth. And then I heard you in the Canadian Tax Foundation. I was like, okay, neither you or I even knew what a bare trust is. And it's this moving target, right? It's like you're saying what was well held as a principle is now out the window and we all have to learn what this is. And I guess that's the risky part. We might miss it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if my name is on my mother's bank account, that's a relatively simple arrangement. But,
not necessarily.
Okay, so tell me why it isn't.
Well, there is an exemption under the current rules for joint ownership that would exclude a lot of common arrangements. say right. that, you know,
it's under $50,000 or those types of.
So that there is an exemption for, call it lower value trust. Yeah. So it's there as well. So that's going to be helpful. There's also an exemption for people holding properties jointly. When, as long as all the legal owners, i.e. all the people on the bank statement when you receive it, are also the beneficial owners of the property. So a classic example would be a bank account that you have with your mom, but on the understanding that you get to use the funds and mom gets to use the funds. Coming back to my example with Tony Soprano had a mother who did not like him very much, probably, which led him to doing what she was doing. But
I think we have crossover promotion now for this. You're going to put it on the Sopranos website. Yeah.
Why not? But it's a perfect example. But because if Tony and his mother had a joint account together, his mother's name was Livia. I will assure
you. You're a fan. Clearly, you were a fan.
I still am. Yeah. Yes, I think it's one of the best shows. It's second to Breaking Bad only. if we were to use that example, those particular individuals, everyone would know that Livia would not be okay with Tony using those funds.
Yeah.
So even though we have an identical situation that looks identical, we have mother and son, joint property, joint bank account, except that we know that Livia told Tony, do not touch my money. This is my money. I added your name just for administration purposes, just so when I die, it's easier to administer, but you do not get to touch my money. As soon as we have that little change, that exemption that I was talking about that would apply to you, Jonathan, doesn't apply to Tony and Livia. And Tony and Livia have to file a bare trust return, even though both Tony and Livia are on legal title for the account. The CRA already knows about them. The bank already knows about them. Everyone already knows about them. But the way the rules are drafted, there is that obligation simply because Tony is not the beneficial owner of that account. He doesn't get to touch the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore, there you go. You have a reporting obligation.
Yeah, interesting.
So I have another question. So if you have a scenario where two individuals and one has bought, let's say, a number of different investments in their name,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, on behalf of the second person, and you've got the, currently it's a $50,000 fair market value
exemption,
right? So as long as the fair value of that asset did not hit $50,000 at any point in the year,
mm-hmm.
then reporting for that item is, for that one is exempt.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say they have three different investments, same arrangement. So individually, those assets would be exempt, but combined,
they're
over the threshold. Are there any rules about
an association type rule?
Yeah, we're saying if you know, do they look at all assets combined that are being held by one individual on behalf of another individual, or could it be split up into three separate bare trusts, one for each
that are exempt asset, because they
that would be exempt?
Right.
Is there anything about that?
I'm pretty sure it would be caught. Yeah. The only exemption that I can think about is that if everyone is related, the exemption amount goes up to $250,000, and there are limits on what assets would qualify for that higher exemption. And I think there is no criteria for for the assets for the $50,000 exemption. But I'm not 100% sure, but I'm about 90% sure that your example would be caught. You cannot avoid the rules simply by splitting those.
Having that four bank accounts under $50,000.
Right.
I don't think it could work.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so how do we, we're early in 2025 with 2026 coming up. What should we be thinking about? What should we be doing now? What should those that are watching What are some of the traps that we can be aware of? Anything come to mind?
I would be thinking, well, I'm still hopeful that we will see a new draft legislation.
Do you think the use piece is coming out, or is that going to remain? You were saying what's changed is the use and benefit, and the use piece is what I took from you to mean that's the problematic piece where a deemed trust can. Do you think that's still going to remain?
I don't know. I know that the Minister of Finance people were in the audience when I gave my presentation, and it's in my
article. Yeah.
It's in my article. So if anyone paid attention, maybe, hopefully, who knows? But the chances of it probably are not great. I do think we will see more changes based on the Joint Committee submissions. They too had an issue with the use
provision
about how unnecessarily broad it is. Yeah. We'll see. Who knows? Maybe the Minister of Finance will make some changes, or at least explain to us what is it that they're trying to target. Yeah. What are the arrangements that they have in mind, where the beneficiary can only use property, cannot control it, cannot dispose of it, cannot earn income from it, and yet they want it to be reportable, and yet that arrangement does not fall under that active express trust arrangement, which already has to be reported under the old rules. We don't need to provide for those.
You just used the term active express trust. Is there two types of trusts there is, or am I to understand active is the same as express?
Back to those centuries of trust law. So we have express trusts.
Express being
that somebody expressly wanted to create it.
Okay. It's in writing?
Can be in writing, can be an oral arrangement, but as long as everyone is sure and everyone knows that there are people who expressly wanted to create an express trust,
yeah.
We have an express trust. That express trust can be an active trust, meaning it can be based on a trust instrument or agreement or anything else. So I'm giving this cup to you, Jonathan, and I'm saying you hold it, and then after 5 years, you can sell it and use proceeds to invest into something else. Yeah. You have to follow my rules, whatever I set for yourself, and then give the money to my children.
Mm.
So
it's an express.
That's an express active trust,
right,
where I give out my control over the cup, and you now hold it based on the rules that I set for you.
Yeah.
But I don't get to come back and change the rules for you. I don't get to take the cup back. The cup is no longer mine. I gave it to you. No, you now hold it. You invest, you do something with it, and then you dispose of it or you give it to my kids or whatever.
Any whole beneficial interest in that at all?
Yeah. So in this example, you don't have any beneficial interest in it. My children will have beneficial interest in that cup.
That's the settler the trust. So, right? So once the settler settles the trust, they cannot have control over it, or it could be attributed back to them, the income.
Yeah. So in this example, remember how many rules I gave to you and all the things that you need to do? Because you have to do all those things, we call it active trust. You are the boss, you manage everything, you make decision, you check all the rules, you give it to my kids when they're ready to receive that cup. So that's an active trust. It's their trust, and when I'm giving this cup to you and I say, Jonathan, you hold on to it. Now the title to this cup will be in your name, not in my name.
Yeah.
But you don't need to do anything.
Yeah.
Or if you do, hold it for me. As soon as I want it back, give it back.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
That's a bear trust. So both arrangements are express arrangements, because presumably before each arrangement, you and I would sit down and talk about it. How are we going to, why did you give me this cup? You know, I gave you this cup to invest in and then give it to my children. Oh, I gave you this cup because I want it back as soon as you want. Yeah. As soon as I want it back, you don't have to do anything. So that's an active trust. That's an express trust that can be active.
Or bear.
Okay. When I want it back, that's and I can get it back, that's a bear trust.
So it's like when Tony gave the box of sand to his neighbor, right? And told him to hold it.
Yes.
And then he would come get it another time.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I found my people.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, that's exactly right. Okay. And then if you want to get even more nerdy, there's also a resulting trust. This is when I'm giving this cup to you and I go, Jonathan, you know what I mean. But there's nothing in writing. Right. We don't talk about it. And you didn't pay me for it.
Right.
Right. But then when I want it back and you go, no, you can't have it back. Then I get to go to court and say, I gave Jonathan my cup. He didn't pay me anything.
Right.
He didn't do anything for me. And really, we all kind of understood that it's my cup and he needs to give it back. But now he's just being funny and silly and I want my cup back.
Yeah.
So that's the court may call it a resulting trust.
Right.
And it's a whole different story about whether or not it's a deemed trust and must be reported, even though you and I didn't talk about it and it wasn't really expressed.
So is there a distinction between deemed and resulting? Or is that one and the same?
That's a question that I pose in my paper. I don't know. I don't know. So in this situation, when it's questionable whether or not we had an express trust, we didn't sit down with you and decide anything. We didn't put anything in writing. We didn't even talk about it. I just gave you my cup for free, and then I want it back. The court says we have a resulting trust, and you have to give it back to me. But under the tax law, I don't know.
And that I think that's a concept that comes up a lot in family law, if I'm not mistaken, the resulting trust.
100%.
Well, we could go on.
Shut up.
There's lots more. But I think maybe this tax season, as we're starting to, again, speak to every one of our clients and go through the current tax stuff, maybe it's a good idea to start prompting questions about arrangements that they might have and make some notes and pull out some details from them.
Absolutely.
Because next tax season, this is going to be
an issue. Again.
An issue, yeah. Presumably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there? You mentioned about the draft. Where is that in terms of the legislative process? It's just draft right now, given our current situation with.
Yes, I don't think a lot has been done. I may be wrong on that. Okay. But quote me on that. Okay. But from what I remember. And I haven't checked in a few, maybe weeks or months.
But we still have legislation that we have to deal with next year. It's just a question of if there's any further revision.
Exactly.
It's not like this is going away.
It's not going away, given what's happening in the world. Although, you know what? So much is happening in the world. Nothing would surprise me anymore.
Yeah.
But my guess is that it will be passed into law and will become law in one way or another. My guess is that we will see further changes from the draft we've seen in August.
And that is probably because of the participation of the country with other OECD. Like as that evolves internationally, that's going to impact our own environment here.
I think so. And I understand that the U.S. has certain requirements that are somewhat similar.
Yeah.
European countries do, Australia. So everyone was on the same.
Yeah. Do you need to get that?
No.
Is that Tony calling?
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, Anna, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Yeah. And there's so many more issues and questions and details and war stories that I'm sure you'd be able to tell. So I'm sure we'll be having you back for a more in-depth discussion on this, especially once the rules are finalized.
I think even just to revisit the existing rules, just at this point, to bring people up to speed, would be well worth the time.
Sure,
I'd love to join you guys.
Okay,
a lot of fun.
Very good.
All right. So, well, tax season's here, and the busiest weeks are just around the corner. So make sure you're prepared with our latest AJAG courses and resources designed to help you stay ahead and on top of everything. So you can visit ajag.ca and sign up for our emails to ensure all our updates land in your inbox. Thank you for watching. Thank you, Anna, again, for being here. And we'll see you on our next episode.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, everyone.